thanks for coming out. This is our 9th in the series, for those keeping score. We doubled up last week on Midrashim, so we've ended up at the 10th, even though it's only the 9th week. This Midrash is a new type for us. We've seen the type, which is sparked by a difficulty in a sentence somewhere in Tanakh that ultimately, in resolving the difficulty, brings us back to Bereishit. That's the one we've seen most often. We've also seen the type that is sparked by a philosophical question. So, for example, a couple of weeks ago, we saw a Midrash that was bothered by the use of the name Elohim for God when Elohim seems to be a plural word. Or the question of why start Bereishit bara Elohim instead of Elohim bara Bereishit, seeming to suggest almost that there's something creating God, depending on how you read the sentence. This one is a Midrash which, as I understand it, wants to teach a lesson, or actually multiple lessons, and invents a question in order to present the lesson. So that if you were to look at the question itself, you would say, is that really a question? And the only reason I believe that it's presented is in order to get to what it wants to say. This Midrash appears here in Bereishit Rabbah. It also shows up in a slightly different form in the Talmud Yerushalmi, Jerusalem Talmud in Masechet Chagiga. So let's launch right into this. We'll see the question. We're going to see four answers given in a Midrash for this question. And the answers are going to spark discussions of their own. So take a look, please, at source number one. And you see the question, and you tell me, you be the judge of just what sort of a question this is. Rabbi Yonah b'shem Rabbi Levi, Amar Rabbi Yonah cites Rabbi Levi to say, Lama nivra ha'olam bebet. Why was the world created with the letter bet? And the commentators explain it's not asking the world was created with the letter bet. What it's asking is that the Torah presents the account of creation starting with the letter bet. So, you be the judge. Is this really the question? Is this really what's bothering if you open up the Chumash, are you going to be troubled by the fact that Bereishit bara Elohim begins with a letter bet?
Maybe I would. Shouldn't it begin with an aleph?
Why?
Because number one.
Aleph is one. Aleph is the first letter of the aleph bet, and therefore stories should start with an aleph.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, clearly that's the supposition, or I shouldn't say clearly, but I believe that is, based on what the Midrash is going to say, that is the supposition, that Aleph is the first letter, you're starting the account of creation, you should begin with an Aleph. To me, the question, it doesn't seem like such a strong question. The Eitz Yosef commentary to the Midrash says, yes, it should have been an Aleph because, as Susie says, it's the head of the alphabet. And also because then you could have started Elohim bara Bereishit, which we had wanted to do in an earlier Midrash. So you put God's name first within the Torah. By starting with a bet, you now no longer have Hashem's name first. Nonetheless, take a look at source number two. We saw this in longer form in the very first week of our series. Rabbi Yeshaya Detrani, writing in the Shilta Giborim, a commentary on the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, says, regarding the types of Midrashim, V'kayotze bozeh omar ne'em rusham gam Midrashim achirim. He says, similar statements, similar to the ones that came before this in the quote, are found in other Midrashim. Amru b'Talmud Eretz Yisrael, and now we're going to see what he's talking about. He quotes the Gemara Yerushalmi, T'chia Midrashot Amanahim. Are the Midrashot Amana from the expression of Emunah, faithful? Are they, so to speak, trustworthy? Drosh v'kabel sachar, learn them and receive reward. That's what the Yerushalmi says. And he explains here, Helecha hadavar mevor, shalo amru chachamim hamidrashim al derech amana v'ikar. He says, this is trying to show you that the sages did not say the Midrash in the manner of something that is of faith, something that is of the essence. But sometimes they simply wanted to expand the reasons for the psukim and analyze them in every way possible. Maybe there would be a hint to something, maybe there would be a support to an idea from a text. And he says, these are parts of the study of Torah. These are among the paths of studying Torah. We're in source number two. Allah Ne'amar Drosh V'Kabel Sachar, regarding which we say, you should learn and receive reward. In other words, what he says the Yerushalmi is saying is that Medrash is not necessarily going for the literal message of the text. Sometimes it's going to look for little hints to which it can attach an important lesson, something that we are supposed to know. Now, it could be that this question of why does the Torah begin with the letter bet is actually the most logical of questions and should be taken as a fundamental question about it. But to me, what we're really seeing here is the form that we call remez, which is the word the Shulchan Gibborim used in this source number two, the form in which some idea is hinted at within the text, not really expressed directly by the text. The remez includes, we saw remez in our first week, we talked about pshat, remez, drush, and sod. So, you know, remez is gematria. Remez is rashei tevot, an acronym. That sort of a thing is remez. And that's what I think we're seeing here. We are hanging an idea on a particular question, on a nuance within the text. So the Medrash asks the question of why is the Torah, so to speak, brought to you by the letter bet? What is it that the letter bet has about it that is unique? And we get four answers. The first answer that we get is found in source number three. This is the part of the Medrash that begins to answer the question. Ella, the Medrash begins, rather, ma bet ze satum mikol tzdadav upatuach milafanav. The letter bet, the form of the letter bet, is closed on all sides, open only in the front. Right, look at a letter bet. I mean, you see it there on your page. The bet is closed on top, it's closed in the back, it's closed on the bottom, and only the front of the bet is open. Kach ein lecha rishus lomar malamata malamala malefnim malachor. So too, you don't have permission to discuss that which is above, below, before, or after creation. And this is a theme we've seen before in Bereishis Rabbah, the idea that certain things are concealed and are meant to be concealed and are not meant to be explored. That's what he's telling you here. Ela miyom shnivraha olam ulahaba, only from the day of creation forward. So the bet is open only in front. Bar Kapara adds to that, based on a pasuk in Sefer Devarim, Bar Kapara Amar ki sha'al nali yamim rishonim asher hayu lefanecha. Now he's quoting part of a longer pasuk, and I tried in the translation to show you the way that he's merging together his explanation with the words of the passage. When you inquire of the first days, asher hayu lefanecha, which existed before you, lemin hayom. And now he skips some words in the sentence that you really need for this to make sense. I inserted them in brackets in the English. From the day when God created man on earth. So that lemin hayom shenivreu atadoresh. From the day you were created, that's what you are allowed to analyze. V'iatadoresh lefnim mikan, but not that which came before. Ulumikzeh Hashemayim, the pasuk continues. Ulumikzeh Hashemayim v'ad kitzeh Hashemayim, from one end of the heavens to the other end of the heavens, that ata daresh v'choker, you can analyze and investigate that. V'iata choker lifnim mikan, but nothing before that. So he says, Bar Kapara says, the right of human investigation extends only to the moment of creation and onward. That's his statement. And again, you know, we saw this a few weeks ago. The idea is not new in Bereishis Rabba with this Medrash. I didn't plan to go into it in depth here because it's something we have explored to a certain extent in terms of the question of why not investigate what came before. Is it because God didn't talk about it, therefore you're not meant to talk about it? Is it because there's a concern that it's going to lead you astray if you start to analyze what came before? Is it because there's something degrading to God if you start to discuss that which he hid? These are all things that we've discussed. But he says, that's the message of the letter Bet. And finally, Darash Rabbi Yehuda ben Pazi, B'masa Bereishis Ba'adei Debar Kapara, Rabbi Yehuda ben Pazi, in fact, taught regarding the deeds of creation as Bar Kapara did, that one is not supposed to analyze these things. Yes?
What does that mean before Bereishis? What could have possibly been before Bereishis? I mean, is he talking about something like that's a little bit more Kabbalistic, that's like, that's something about Bereishis that I'm not supposed to understand, or literally before Bereishis,
because
that wasn't...
So, before Bereishis, I think before Bereishis is exactly where he's going. The idea that God has an existence that can somehow be associated as a before, whatever before means when there's no such thing as time, an existence to God before human beings, not just human beings, but before this universe is around. What was God doing? And that, he's saying, is off limits. The Bet tells me that's sealed off. And not just the before, but mala, 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 mata. What's above? What's below? What does God do up there in the heavens? Not supposed to know. Not supposed to investigate. These are things that he says we are told by the Bet, are simply not to be discussed.
Sorry, what do they mean by below?
So, the approach taken by the Eitz Yosef in tackling that is, hang on, where was it? Yeah, malamala me rakia shal rashei hachayos umalamata me hen harei amar umitacha zraos olam. That which is above, where the angels are above, and that which is the support of the world from below. Now, what does above and below mean is still a good question, but it's what he seems to be referring to are heavenly realms of one kind or another. That seems to be the idea. Yeah.
Is this also referring to possibly other worlds before this world, like substantiation for dinosaurs and that kind of thing, or
can be? Can be.
Maybe some of the schools shy away from that topic, or.
I don't think they shy away for that reason. I think they shy away from it because the topic is difficult. I think nothing would be easier than to tell the children that when you see dinosaur skeletons that are 65 million years old, that's because there were worlds before this one and that's where they come from. Whether that's the right answer or the wrong answer is irrelevant. It's an easy answer to give. You know, and I remember in seventh grade being shown a movie in which they told us about how there are four ice ages, and there were four this, and there were four that, and lo and behold, if you look in Kabbalah, you find the idea that we are the fourth world. They were very happy to actually trot out that idea as a way of addressing questions that we had. So yeah, I think it, you know, the question is really, is that an honest answer?
Well, any child who thinks about it will realize that doesn't make sense anyway.
Because
if the remains are in this world, number one, not in another world, and number two, if God really wanted to destroy a previous world and start from scratch, why would he leave remnants of a previous world? Just as a tease, or just ask them so we would question, or what for?
Right. I'm gonna stop the line there, not because it's not fascinating, but because I have Minchat 8:50. It's very tempting. We have a lot to see, and I want to make sure to see it. One thing I did want to note here: if you take a look at source number 4, did anyone recognize that character right before the question mark? That's a letter Bet. It's Paleo-Semitic. The original form of Hebrew. Paleo-Semitic. The original Hebrew alphabet. Meaning, the alphabet that we call Hebrew today the font, if you will, that we call Hebrew today, is identified in the Gemara as Ashurit, Assyrian. So named because the Jews acquire this alphabet at some point in their exiles and begin using it. There's great debate in the Gemara as to whether the Torah was given with the alphabet that we identify as the alphabet, what the Gemara calls Ashurit, or whether it was given in an older alphabet, which we know of, which we have texts of, parts of Torah even appearing in, which is, you know, this Paleo-Semitic, this older Hebrew, which the Gemara calls Ketav Ivri. So that I bring it here, just because you're making a point about the shape of the letter Bet and saying the Torah starts with the letter Bet. You know, what about somebody who had the older alphabet? And would he have seen your message in it as well? That's what a Bet looks like in the older alphabet.
When was this older alphabet used? Before the Common Era?
So, before the Common Era, for sure.
Sure.
The question is at what point it's used and at what point it stops, and that is not at all clear. In the Dead Sea Scrolls, we find scrolls that do use this.
Oh, do they? How do you know what is which letter? How do you know that's a Bet?
Sorry?
How do you know that letter is a Bet?
Right, because you find our texts, our Torah texts, written in this other alphabet. You can make the associations very clearly. You find texts which are actually mixed, which will have our Hebrew alphabet for most, but Hashem's name will appear in the older Hebrew alphabet. You find all sorts of things. It's a great discussion. It's a lot of fun. I did a Shabbos afternoon shiur on it a couple of years ago. But the point is that, you know, you have to ask yourself, if you're going to be Doresh, if you're going to teach something based on the form of the letter, which letter do you mean? It comes up in the classic line in the Gemara about Mem and Samach, where they talk about the Luchos and how the letters in the Luchos are engraved all the way through. And that raises the question of the letter Mem Sofit, like in the word Avadim, right? And the letter Samach, how did they stand? Why wouldn't the middle collapse if it's really engraved straight through? And it says, well, B'nais Hayuom Vim, they stand miraculously. That's the Babli's answer. I think it's Rav Chisda there who gives that answer. But the Yerushalmi actually has a different approach based on this question of, well, what did your Mem and your Samach actually look like? What were they in the, in the Luchot? So the truth is that using this form of the letter Bet, we're still okay because it's still covered top, bottom, and back. But I had to throw that out there, and it's going to matter when we see another of their answers. So the first answer this Medrash gives is, we have the letter Bet to start with in order to remind us that there are things you're not supposed to investigate. Look at the second answer. Source number 5. Lama nivra ha'olam bebet. Why was the world created with the letter Bet? Lo diacha shein shnei olamim, to teach you that there are two worlds. Ha'olam hazeh va'olam haba. The letter Bet is the second letter in the alphabet. Its numerical value, so to speak, is the number 2. It teaches me that God created two worlds, this world and the next. And it makes sense to do this at the start of the Torah, because as you read about the genesis of the world, you wonder, why doesn't it talk at all about this other world? There's no mention here of Olam Haba. Well, now I have my answer. There is mention of Olam Haba. We started with the letter Bet instead of the letter Aleph in order to hint at the existence of another world. I brought you here source number 6, a Mishnah in Brachot, which talks about how at one point, when people concluded a bracha, people would say, Hashem is blessed ad Olam, to eternity. But the Mishnah there that I'm quoting in source number 6 says that the Sadducees, and I don't think it's necessarily the Sadducees, but it was some sect, came along and said, well, you know, ad ha'olam, you bless God to eternity, that suggests there's only one world. You don't have multiple worlds. So they said, no, now we're going to have people say, min ha'olam ve'ad ha'olam, from eternity to eternity. In other words, this was a philosophical battle. In the days of the Mishnah, in the days of the Second Temple, in the days of this Medrash, there is a debate running about this world and the next world, and therefore we need the Medrash to tell me, letter Bet teaches, yes, there is another world. Again, my question is this really, you know, is this sparked by the question? Someone wants to know why you start with a Bet. Ah, now I know why I started with a bet, to teach me about two worlds, or is the question coming to serve the answer? What I really want to do is show that there are two worlds, and this is a way that I could demonstrate it. But the third answer is where things really get interesting. The third answer is source number 7. Davar acher, alternatively, v'lama bebet, why start with a bet? Shehu lashon bracha. Bet is for bracha. Bracha meaning blessing. We always try to start on an upbeat note. The Gemara of Pesachim talks about that in the beginning of Pesachim. We try to start on an upbeat note. So we start the Torah with a bet because bet is for bracha. V'lama lo ba'alef, why not with an aleph? Shu lashon arira, because aleph stands for arur, which is a curse. Davar acher, alternatively, another reason why we don't like the aleph, lama lo ba'alef, shalolita in pischa un pela bikorsin, so as not to give room for those who are heretical, lomar to say, heya ha'olam yacholamo chu nivra b'lashon arira, how could the world stand? After all, it was created with an expression of arur, an expression of a curse. Ela amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says, harei ani borei oso b'lashon bracha, I will create it with an expression of blessing, and I only wish that the world should endure. There are really two parts, before you flip the page, there are two parts in this answer. The first part is that it's bracha, and the second part is that it's not klala, it's not arur, it's not a curse. That's important to look at the structure again. Why a bet? Because that's bracha, as opposed to aleph, which is arur. And then it adds, alternatively, not an aleph, because if it was an aleph, then people would say, God cursed the world, God did not want the world to endure. The message of this answer is deeper than, bet is for bracha, aleph is for arur. The message is that God desires this world. This is not a cursed world. This is not a corrupted world, a world of original sin and of people who cannot possibly be pure and so on. That's not what this world is. This world is a good place. This is a world that God wishes to have last and endure. That's our third statement based on the bet. What's the problem, though, with this answer?
Aleph is also for Abba. Abba,
yeah, we have lots of good aleph words. Right? And is bet really only bracha? We have no bad words for the bet? Oh, come on.
God put so much effort into creating a world and say, ki tov and all this, and not wanted to endure.
Well, that's a major philosophical debate, though. Is this world considered to be appropriate to endure? After all, it doesn't take him long to decide human beings are rotten and, you know, wipe out the generation with a mabul. And, you know, it's not as though the resolution to the mabul is, yes, people really are good. It's, well, people are capable of learning, so I guess I won't wipe out the world entirely next time. That's, you know, hardly a ringing endorsement. I think the message of I want this world to endure is a great message, but the means of getting to it is difficult. And in fact, Ibn Ezra, I don't think it's too strong to say he mocks this Medrash. Take a look at source number 8. Ibn Ezra's introduction to his commentary on the Torah is a landmark text that everybody should really read at some point. Ibn Ezra's his introduction, he talks about the different styles of commentary and why he's going to write his commentary the way he does. It's fascinating. It's very interesting. He's not the only one to do this. And so you'll have Abarbanel writing about why he doesn't write the way that Ibn Ezra does. Abarbanel is very funny because Abarbanel writes at length and Ibn Ezra does not. And so Abarbanel picks on Ibn Ezra. He says, what kind of commentary is that? You know, sometimes he has less to say. His comments are shorter than the Pasuk itself, as though that's a bad thing. But Ibn Ezra picks on everybody else. So I have no particular mercy on him. But take a look at what he has here. He says, Gam yesh drash shu tov la'achirim. There is a form of drash, of exegesis, of analysis, which is good for others. V'yadrich b'derech tvuna es hane'arim. It will guide in the path of understanding the young. And when he uses the word na'ar here, he doesn't mean chronological young. This is an insult. This is narish, you know, those who are immature. And he says, Ki yesh of she'inenu ro'eh b'yom hanigohos, u'balayla ro'eh mipnei she'inav kehos. And if you caught the rhyme, yes, he's writing in verse. He says, you know, there are birds that can't really see in the light of day, but at night they see very well because their eyes are weak. They can't deal with too much light. They don't have the means of filtering light. And therefore, if the light is too bright, they can't see well. They do better at night. He says, there are some people who can't really take real Torah. So they need Torah that's been diluted. And for them, drash like this is good. Kedrash sha'olam nivra bebet ba'avur bracha. Like the drash that says the world was created with the letter bet because of bracha. He says that's an example of something that's not real Torah. And his argument is, v'ima davar kacha, if that were really true, hine Hashem bokeg ha'aretz uboleka, he uboleka. He says, look at the pasuk in Yeshaya, which says, behold, God empties the land and ruins her. And bokeg, starting with a bet, is to empty out. Bolka is to ruin. Bolek is to ruin. And then he goes through, I didn't bring all of them, that's my dot, dot, dot there, the ellipsis. He goes through five or six more psukim that have words that start with the letter bet, that are bad, that connote destruction and devastation. And he says, Asher ma'at ha'seichel bilibo, va'av ki asher chokhmat elokim bilibo, yuchal otzi midrashim. He says, you know what? Somebody who has a little bit of a brain, and even the wisdom of God, could invent his own midrashim too. V'kulam kineged haguf hapashut heim kemalbushim. And all of them would be like clothing compared to the simple body. In other words, there is the Torah, and then there is the external. And you could invent externals all day long. You could create midrashim, and you know they would look like this. And he says he clearly doesn't have a whole lot of respect for it. V'kadmonenu zichrom levracha amru al kacha ein mikra yotzei midei pshuto. Regarding this, the Gemara says in several places the pasuk should only be taken in its simplest sense. So Ibn Ezra is having a good laugh at what we just said. Now that's a problem. Because you shouldn't be able to laugh at Bereishis Rabbah. I mean, Bereishis Rabbah is as old and authentic a midrashic text as we have. So what are we to make of Ibn Ezra really belittling what we're seeing here? That he contradicts Medrash sometimes in his commentary is known. He does. And that's okay, because there is a concept of all the different, you know, we talked about Pshat, Remez, Drush, Sod having four layers, and Ayin Panim LaTorah, 70 different facets to Torah. There's nothing wrong with someone, and all the standard, classic, respected commentators do it, opening up the Pasuk and saying, the Pasuk means this, and this is what's going on in the story, or this is the message of the Halacha, even though it'll contradict any number of other midrashim. Ramban does it, Rashi does it, Ibn Ezra does it, Abarbanel certainly does it. They all do it. What's unique here is really the lack of respect for the text itself, the lack of respect for the Medrash, to say, well, this just isn't, you know, this is, you know, I mean, juvenile. It is rather unusual, so much so that if you take a look at source number 9, the Aviezer commentary on the Ibn Ezra. Okay, that's how you know you've really made it, when there's a commentary on your commentary. So, Rav Shlomo HaKohen of Lisa in the 19th century writes a commentary on the Ibn Ezra's commentary. And right at the very beginning, as part of his very first comment, he talks about what the Ibn Ezra has done here. And he says, Hine harav b'hakdama ala Torah soser das hamedrash. He says, the Rav, the master, Ibn Ezra, in his introduction to the Torah, contradicts the view of the Medrash. But, after quoting it, he says, ubesefer tzachos, in his work tzachot, it's actually tzachot, there's another word there in the title of the book, but he doesn't mention it here, I forget what the second word is. But ubesefer tzachot mevuar ibcha, Shekasav Tsuras Haosios Vita'amam. He says in his work Tzachos, which is essentially a grammatical work, he contradicts what he did in his introduction to the Torah. Because there he talks about the forms of the letters and their meanings. Vizel Shono, here's something he wrote, Ibn himself wrote. Hakuf hefech ha'emes klal ala'ad. He wrote that the word kuf is the opposite of truth. It is a curse forever, because kuf is for klala. So, you know, Rabbi Ibn Ezra, if you don't believe that this is serious, this study of the form of the letter bet, and why does the Torah start with a bet, and you don't like the association of bet with bracha, then why are you associating kuf with klala? You're playing the game that you just insulted. So therefore, Rav Shlomo HaKohen says, since I have an apparent contradiction between one comment by Ibn Ezra and another comment by Ibn Ezra, the answer is one of them isn't really stated by Ibn Ezra. Can you guess which one he's going to throw out? Lachain, he says, therefore, he'emanti l'divrei rabim v'chein shalemim, I believe the great ones, the whole ones, the complete ones, asher gazru omer al kama divarim haksuvim basefer enam mipiv. He says, you know what? I think that many of the things that he wrote in the book, that are written in the book, are not actually his own. There are comments that were attributed to Ibn Ezra, that appeared in the manuscript, but they were not his writing. Strangers came in, they put in their own ideas. Students who misunderstood wrote things in his name and desecrated his work. He says it's not Ibn Ezra talking. What you saw in source number 8 wasn't Ibn Ezra.
Do they say this about others?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Well, isn't that kind of like a last resort? You know, whether explanations say, oh, it's really, you didn't really say it. Don't politicians do that?
I was misquoted.
Exactly.
Well, he has a problem, because he believes he has discovered Ibn Ezra contradicting Ibn Ezra. And keep in mind, contradiction is much more serious before the days of the printing press, and certainly before our day. Because whereas today, people will say any number of things, and publish any number of things, and frankly pay little attention, because the threshold to publishing is so low that they don't have to strain and sweat and make sure it's perfect, because they'll just go back and publish something else after. And they'll make money doing so. In those days, you're putting together your manuscript, you're much more careful about what you're going to take the time and effort to copy out on your handwritten scrolls. So the idea that he would have just said what he said in Sefer Tzachos, even though he didn't believe it, and happened to contradict what he wrote in his introduction to the Chumash, is hard to accept. So he is forced, or he believes he is forced, to say, one of these isn't really Ibn Ezra, and if I have to choose which one I'm going to throw out, you better believe it's the one that's insulting to Medrash Rabbah. That's the one that's gone. Rabbi Joshua Waxman, source number 10, wrote something that I thought was very interesting about this issue. I was hunting around to see if I could find anything modern on this, anyone who could who would address this, and I started plugging in different pieces of the quotes from Ibn Ezra, you know, on this to see where would I find someone who discussed it. And lo and behold, he said something which it's hard for me to say is the answer, but I think there's a lot of sense to it. He argues that what Ibn Ezra is writing is not actually self-contradictory. If you were to look more carefully at the source in this Sefer Tzachot, you would find that his piece about the letter Kuf is not simply Kuf is for Klala. He does a whole analysis of the shape of the letter. He does a whole analysis of the fact that it's called a kuf, and kuf is like kof, which is a monkey. He comes up with a whole study of the letter trying to show that kuf really fits with the message of klala, the message of a curse. It's not simply something arbitrary. And so based on that, take a look at source number 10. He says, to Ibn Ezra's mind, bet is for bracha and aleph is for arira is entirely arbitrary. It is the same as saying C is for cookie. There are plenty of other words which start with C, such as cabbage and carnival. They didn't establish that there is a connection between C and cookie, right? Other than the word starts with a C. In Sefer Tzachot, that wasn't even his goal at all. He began with the form of the letter associated with its meaning. After developing it for the ascending letter Lamed, where he has a whole discussion about the Lamed, which stood for all things positive and uppermost because its head ascended and because of its phonology, by which he means the way that saying a Lamed requires that you lift the tongue upward in order to make the sound, he developed the opposite idea based on the form of the descending letter Kuf, which was an inverted Lamed, and on the basis of the parallel to apes and Kuf meaning monkey. So that the idea that Waxman suggests, which I think has a certain weight to it, is that Ibn Ezra is not objecting to the idea that you associate a letter with a word that starts with it. His objection is to doing so in what seems to be a very lackadaisical way, non-serious way. That's what his objection is on this medrash here, that it doesn't seem to be serious. Now,
contradicting the contradictor.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's correct. And maintaining the authenticity of the Ibn Ezra quote in the process, yes.
Well, the Ibn Ezra wrote a whole book on the shape of the letters and said earlier that that's not even the authentic original letter anyway. It's just an Assyrian whatever. Then what point is the trying to find a meaning to a letter that wasn't?
Right. So the question of what Ibn Ezra is doing in Sefer Tzachot, he only does it with Kuf and Lamed, by the way. Those are the only two, as I understand it, that he actually does this with. But it is possible to argue that even if this isn't the original, God gave us this alphabet, and certainly in the Gemara it's presented as a God-given alphabet for us to, you know, for us to use because it is special, because there is a special character to it. And the Gemara does that. The Gemara reads into Bet, Gimel, and Dalet, and the letter dragging behind the Gimel, the leg dragging behind the Gimel. There's more like that there, yes.
So, if that's the case, then was it that in the Medrash Rabbah they didn't, like, it was arbitrarily assigned the bet for the breeches, otherwise then Ezra wouldn't have...
Right, so now we have to come back to Medrash Rabbah. If we have now upheld the authenticity of this comment from Ibn Ezra, now we have to go back to Medrash Rabbah and say, well, Medrash Rabbah, what are you doing? Because now I want to know, why is A a rira instead of apple, so to speak?
Well, it doesn't matter because there were two or three other reasons.
Well, they're true, but what does it mean with this one? So I'm going to come to this in 1 second, but I want to first note, Eitz Yosef tries to address this and says, well, the other letters that are bad that start with a bet appear in Navi, they don't appear in Chumash. Which doesn't seem to be correct, because if you look at some of Ibn Ezra's examples, they actually come from Chumash. I just didn't bring all of his examples here. The Abu Draham has a very interesting note in his comments on HaKol Yoducha, which we say on Shabbos. So take a look at source number 11. Sefer Abu Draham on Tefillah, on Davening, says, V'yesh lomar, you could say, shelo yitachen lomar zeh, that you can't say that bet is a bad word. Sharei hefech bokeik hu malei, vehefech bizayon hu kavod. He says, if you were to pick the word bokeik, which means empty, and say, that's my bet word, your opposite word for empty is male, which is full, which doesn't start with an aleph. It starts with a mem. And if you were to take bizayon, disgrace, as your bet word, that's a negative word, the opposite of that is honor, which is kavod. That doesn't start with an aleph. Vein echem matchil ba'aleph. V'lo timtza ba'aleph ubet davar sheyiyah ha'echad hefech chaveiro. U'maschil ba'elu ashtei osios ki'im aruru baruch. He says the point isn't bad words start with aleph and good words start with bet. His point is that the only opposite pair with aleph and bet are arur and baruch. You have to now study this.
Why are aleph and bet opposites?
They're not. The words that we want to associate with them are. Because remember that they're starting with the assumption that the Torah should have started with aleph and instead it started with bet. So therefore there must be something that bet has that aleph doesn't. And the only pair of opposites we can find for Aleph and Bet are Arur and Baruch. That's Abu Draham's argument for justifying this. But I would, frankly, justify it differently. I would go back to the point that I made in the beginning about the goal of this medrash. If the goal is as the Shilta Giborim suggests, which is, I want to teach a lesson, and I'm going to analyze a pasuk any which way in order to get to the lesson I would like to teach, then it doesn't have to be a serious point of Aleph is for Arur and Bet is for Baruch. Ibn Ezra, you're right. There are other words that we could have chosen, 100% true. But there was a lesson we wanted to teach, and this was a good way to teach it. Because whenever someone starts the Chumash, he's going to remember, hey, Bet is Bracha. The world is blessed. This is a world that God desires. That, to my mind, is what this Medrash is doing. It's not placing a whole lot of weight. In the same way that in the Gemara we find various times, and we actually saw it a couple of weeks ago with Rabbi Simlai, people approach the sages and ask them questions, and the sages give them an answer, and afterwards the students turn to the sages and say, okay, that wasn't really your answer. What's the real answer? And then the sage goes into a discussion that they didn't, for whatever reason, want to use the first time. That's what's going on here. They want to get a lesson across, and this is a simple way to get the lesson across, even if it's not 100% serious. Yes?
But in my mind, it doesn't make the lesson very strong unless the question was strong. Like, it's sort of, if the question was sort of weak, then having this profound lesson doesn't really have the same effect.
Well, neither the question was strong nor the answer. The question itself of why did you start with a bed?
Blessed, like that's a really big point. Like,
right.
That's something you can really learn from Rishis, but if it's coming from a place that's like, you could technically gain anything from that question, then the fact that that's the lesson doesn't really, I don't know.
But the question that came before it was, why start with a bet? Which to my mind wasn't a real question. In other words, the question of why do you start with a bet wasn't a real question. So the answer of, because bet is bracha, is no stronger or no weaker than the question that led to it. And his whole point is simply to be able to say this nice thing that, you know, the world was created with bracha. I understand what you're saying, but to my mind, the whole thing is a construct. The question doesn't need a good answer because the question itself wasn't this burning question. Why is the sky blue? Well, if it was green, you'd ask me the same question. That to my mind is what's going on here. So that's our third answer. Understanding that even my answer, my much wanted answer, is not a great answer. This is the way that I look at it. Feel free to adopt any of the other answers that we've seen. But this third approach is to state that the world is valuable to God. The fourth and last answer that's given is that it's to teach that Hashem created the world. And here we go back to the form of the letter. Davar Acher, source number 12, alternatively. Lama bebet, why with a bet? Elama bet ze yeshlo shnei uktsin. The bet has two points to it. Echad milamala, v'echad milamata me'achorav. One on the top, meaning the upper left-hand side of the bet. It curves up a little bit. And then the other point is the bottom on the right side, the back of it. So Omrim Lebet, mi bara'acha, we say to the bet, who created you? Vahu mar'eh ba'okso milamala, it points upward with a little chup that's there at the end of the top. V'omar, zeh shalamala bara'ani, he says, the one above created me. Umashimo, and what is his name? Vahu mar'eh lahen ba'okso shalacharav, he shows that with the point that's behind, pointing back to the Aleph. V'omer Hashem Shemo, saying God's name, that's the one that God is his name, meaning, as the Banos Kahuna commentary explains, many of Hashem's names start with the letter Aleph, Elohim, Kael, Ehyeh, the way we pronounce Hashem's four-letter name, right? We say Ado, right? All of these start with an Aleph. Also, the structure of the letter Aleph, and you know, for those who don't like gematria, close your ears. But the structure of the letter Aleph is a Vav with two Yuds, right? A Vav, and then a Yud on top and a Yud below. And that's actually the way you form a letter Aleph. That's the technically correct way to form it. The gematria, the numerical value of Vav is 6, Yud is 10. So if you add the two Yuds and the Vav, you get 26, which is Yud, He, Vav, and the letter He, which is the great name of Hashem. So the bet is hinting to the Aleph that came before it as that's the name of God. Here, we do have a problem if we go with the ancient Hebrew, because you don't have points pointing to the Aleph, nor do you have Vav and Tuyuds in your letter Aleph, for that matter. So this could be within the belief in the Gemara that the Torah was originally written in what we call Ktav Ashuri, so therefore they would have had the bet the way we have it to begin with. Or it could just be within what we use now, or it could be, it doesn't matter at all, because again, the point is the lesson, not the question. So, four answers are given. We began with a bet to close off that which came before, to hint to the existence of two worlds, this world and the next, to state that the world is valuable and blessed by God, and to state that Hashem created the world. But the last part of the Medrash, and I'm racing a little bit, I'm sorry, is, what about the Aleph? Don't forget the Aleph. And here, as the Eitz Yosef notes, we anthropomorphize letters. We take the notion that everything that exists in this world has some kind of a soul, some kind of a malach associated with it, including the letters of the Aleph Bet. So the Medrash here is bothered by something, and I'm going to cut short what I would normally leave open to discussion. I apologize. But the Medrash is bothered by the fact that Bet is not used for the Aseres Hadibros. When Hashem comes to humanity and says, I'm going to tell you face to face what it is that I want, my most important message to humanity, he doesn't start with a Bet, he starts with Aleph. Well, shouldn't you? What happened? You just threw all our reasons out the window. Why did you start with an Aleph over there? So the Medrash says, to pay a debt. Source 13. Rabbi Elazar bar Chanina b'shem Rabbi Acha. Rabbi Elazar bar Chanina says in the name of Rabbi Acha, Esrim b'shisha doros haisa ha'alev korei tagar lefnei kisosh alakadosh baruch hu. For 26 generations, the Aleph complained before God. 26 generations from Adam until the Torah is given at Har Sinai. If you count the generations, 10 generations Adam to Noah, 10 generations Noah to Abraham, and then you go through until you get to Moshe, 6 more generations, 26. Amra lefanav, it said before God, Ribono Shalola, Master of the Universe, Ani Rishon Shalosios, Velovarasa Olam Chabi, I was the first letter and you did not create your world with me. What happened? You skipped me. It's a diss. Amra la Hakadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem said, Ha'olam Lo'ola Nivra Ela Bizchus HaTorah. He says, you know what? The whole world was created only in the merit of the Torah, an idea we've seen in earlier Midrashim. Shnamar, as the pasuk says, Hashem b'chachma yasad eretz. Hashem founded the world with chachma, meaning wisdom, meaning Torah. L'machar ani ba litein Torah b'Sinai, tomorrow, so to speak, I'm going to come give the Torah at Sinai. Ve'eini poseach techila elabach. I will begin only with you, with the Aleph. I'm paying you back at the Aseres Hadibros. Shenemar Anochi Hashem Elokecha, because it begins with Anochi. I'm passing this around, by the way, because I see that we have a couple of people who haven't been here yet. If you would like to be on the email list to get the sheets in advance of the shiur, please, or to get follow-up from the shiur, as I sometimes send out, please enter your email address. You're already on it.
I know I'm on it. Just if you don't have much time, I will email you
I'll get it. So he concludes saying, thank you. He says, the Aseres Hadibros begin with Anochi. And Rav Hoshaya Omer Lama Nikra Shmo Aleph. Rav Hoshaya says, in fact, the name of the letter is Aleph. Why? Shehu Maskim Me Aleph. Aleph meaning 1,000. It agreed. It agreed to this deal from before 1,000. Meaning, Shnemar Davar Tziva LeElef Door, because the Torah says, the Pasuk says, it's a Pasuk in Tehillim, that Hashem instructed the Torah after 1,000 generations. What that means is a very good question. One possibility is, we're taught that Hashem actually has 974 generations of Malachim or something before he creates the world. So 974 plus the 26 is 1,000. That's one explanation. Another explanation is that there were supposed to be 1,000 generations before Hashem gave the Torah, but he decided to cut it short Because if you waited 1,000 generations, the world couldn't have survived. The world needed to have Torah. Thank you. So either way, with whichever explanation you take for the 1,000, we're told that Hashem makes it up to the Aleph, which is important first of all because it addresses our question of why don't you start the Aseret HaDibros with Bet? Now that you've given me such convincing arguments for using a letter Bet, number one. And number two, it also teaches a lesson. It teaches divine fairness. It teaches, we have other midrashim like that, if you think about it, like Hashem taking away the spoils from the Yamsuf, from the fish that were in the Red Sea, when he takes the Egyptians out in order to throw them up on the land so the Jews should see that the Egyptians died. So then we're told Hashem promises the sea, later on you'll get your reward. Hashem doesn't cheat anybody. Everybody gets what they're supposed to get. And so this is the opportunity for the letter Aleph to get what it's supposed to get. So that's the core idea. I did rush a little bit, I apologize, but you'll be able to catch the recording on Kosher Tube and do a review. All right.